Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. I am your host, Anthony Cazenza, and it has been a crazy couple of weeks, I guess a week and a half since free agency has started, and which is odd to say because the Cincinnati Bengals are not usually the most active in free agency, but between who they've signed, who of their players have signed elsewhere, the visits they've had, all that kind of stuff. There's been a lot of news. We're going to talk about that and put our little twist and opinions on it. Speaking of opinions, we've got a guest co-host tonight, Cody Toomey, who many of you know. Is it at Coda Kai on Twitter? Is that
how you pronounce it? Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. Cody and I have been kind of virtual buddies for a while. We've had the opportunity to also attend a scouting event together. So it's good to have you here, man. It's been too long since we've had you on the show. How are things?
Oh, yeah, things are going well. Life is going well. As we just discussed off air, our kids are pretty much the same age. So we're going through that, getting ready for the terrible twos.
Yeah, I'm already in them. My guy just turned two, and he's a sweet kid. But sometimes, man, when he rages, it's Hulk time. but good to have you here, man. And I think you and I have a lot of the same viewpoints on certain things. We're around the same age, I think. So we've had similar experiences with the Bengals, but I think we do differ on some other things. So I'm excited to have you just to talk about all kinds of things tonight. This program is available on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. It's on the Megaphone platform. We are on Spotify. So if you are on Spotify, you can check us out there. We're also on CincyJungle.com, and you can get our stuff on YouTube. Just a little sidebar for those of you who are strictly the YouTube subscribers, and that's okay, but there is a couple of extra audio portions on our feed that are not videos on the YouTube channel. So if you want to make sure you get all of the stuff, definitely keep subscribing to YouTube, but there may be a couple of things, especially these update type of episodes we do, I guess, that may not show up on the YouTube channel. They'll show up on the audio feed, though. So make sure you're subscribing to both and check out all of our material. So, Cody, let's just kick it off, man. A lot of news. It's hard to kind of pinpoint where to start. But I guess since you and I have been pegged at times Bengals cynics, I guess the easy target is to go free agency. I don't want to harp a ton on some of the contracts that were signed last week because we talked about them a little bit, but on last week's episode. But I do want to get your take on really the five major guys that they've signed or re-signed at this point. And of course, we're talking about in terms of re-signing, we're talking about Tyler Eifert, we're talking about Preston Brown, we're talking about Bobby Hart, we're talking about the contracts to B.W. Webb, we're talking about the John Miller, the guard. I guess start just kind of with the offensive line. I think you, like most people, were not a fan of the Bobby Hart contract. It does seem to be a bit more manageable than it was at first blush, but your overall take on Bobby Hart and the contract he received, as well as what John Miller brings to the table for the offensive line.
Yeah, for me, the Bobby Hart thing is more of a, in the field I work, a lot of it's perception, right? And what kind of perception and what kind of image do you give to the other members of the team that, I mean, they know who are the top performing players are, right? And he performs poorly if you go by PFF's grades at all. But I mean, I think you can just, anybody who has two eyeballs watched games and thought, that's probably not a great NFL right tackle. And then to give him a sevenfold raise, what does that show and image does that give the other team? So somebody who, Tyler Boyd, who has a massive year and has a breakout year. And then, you know, if you're him, it's like, well, you know, we always get the cap and cash, right? So cap isn't really a problem anymore. The problem for the Bengals is cash, right? Mm-hmm. These guys would take deals and you've got to pay them. The problem is they're always, you know, top 10 cash spenders. And they tell you that all the time. Well, the reason that is because for a guy to take a contract with less guaranteed money, I think they're, if you look at these contracts, it seems like they're having to pay and they're having to overpay a bit to get them to sign on the dotted line because there's no guaranteed money. So I think that's part of it is, well, we don't have to write you a guaranteed check. So cool, I'll take the deal, but I want an extra $2 million than what I'm worth. And if you think about it like that, you know, they end up spending more. So cool that they're spending their to their cap. But at the same time, are we, when we had Ray Maluga on this team for 2 years past, he should have. It's like you're paying him $7 million to be a run-stuffing defender who isn't in the league anymore. That role is not that important. So why are we paying a linebacker $7 million to play that role when you can find somebody else that's similar for $2 million? And I think part of it is they don't want the image of being quote-unquote cheap. So they hand out these contracts and they're paying people more than what they're worth. And thus they get to a cap number that looks reasonable. The Bobby Hart thing was kind of like a breaking point for me. I had to just kind of disappear for a week and just not deal with it. I mean, I literally was just like 3 years, $21 million for a guy who literally was a turnstile, you know? So, and with the new numbers, it's okay, but we all know that they're not going to, you know, you can tell me all the outs they have with no dead money and then line up the contracts for me. And like you said, we've been known as pessimists or whatever, but I feel like I'm a realist and I want to push this team. And I know that they don't listen to me and say, oh, Kodakai is talking trash on us on Twitter. We better change our ways. But it doesn't mean I'm going to, so I demand more of them than I know that I'll get because it's just, you know, I want to say things they should do. And if they don't do them, that's fine. But that doesn't mean I have to not have the opinion that they should. And, you know, you can tell me that there's outs in his contract, there's outs in Bobby Preston Brown's contracts, but line up the people that they've cut and everyone's going to point to George Iloka. I will swear up and down there was other things that caused him to get cut. I mean, his play had declined. He was making a lot of money, but I think they just decided they had two strong safeties and he was the more expensive version. I don't think that was as much of we had an out with him, right? And so they don't typically cut guys when they have outs. Ray Maluga, Pecco, the list goes on and on and on of players that were being paid more than what that person in that role typically is paid in the NFL. So my thing is they cut perfect, so they got 5.6 million or whatever. So what are you going to do with that money, right? Is that what we spent on Eifert? I like that they brought Eifert back. I'll give them kudos for that. And everyone can say he's injury prone and Tyler Eifert and he's going to play two games. All these things are fine. But if you look at the games when he's on the field, Andy Dalton's best when he can make a good pre-snap read. And when you put Tyler Eifert on the field, he's going to get his pre-snap read every time because they're either going to put a corner on him or they're going to put a safety on him, and he's going to know it's cover one or cover two or cover three, all based on whoever matches up with Eifert. So it makes Andy Dalton a more palatable quarterback. I would argue you look at the writing on the wall, and I think Mo Egger wrote something about it last week, and it's like embrace the tank, and the tank doesn't mean you – if you do it right, if they do what they've done and they've not really been great or bad, we're going to continue to have that for, you know, maybe four or five more years of 6 to 10 win seasons, no real chance for the championship. If they just cut ties with the people. So ask AJ Green, here's a contract. We want to extend you for 5 years. We're going to rebuild next year, and then we're going to try to push for 2021 and beyond, right? That's when we're going to reopen our Super Bowl window. Do you want to be a part of that? If he says no, you start to dangle him out and see what you can get for him. Tyler Boyd, here's the plan. You're young. You're part of the core. Here's the contract we want to offer you. And you got a Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, and everyone can say, oh, they're great players. You don't want to trade them, but I mean, they deserve to have a chance to win if you're going to be rebuilding and they don't think they're going to be able to play on the other half of the window when it opens back up, right? So you can – the Browns were awful. They won 0 games 15 months ago, and now they're 14-1 odds to win the Super Bowl. They got their quarterback, and they got 2 years of stacked up young, cheap talent. The Bengals could do the same thing. You know, if I'm the Bengals this year at 11 – there's probably, unless one of the top five players happens to be there, I'm trying desperately to get a 2020 first round pick, and I'm trying to get to the 20s.
Okay.
And I'm going to take Andre Dillard. I'm going to take Jonah Williams. I'm going to take Devin Bush if he's there. I'm going to take any of those tackles or linebackers, and they're going to be my future plan. And I'm going to hope that 2020 pick gives me what I need to get my quarterback next year if I need to.
You're talking about those players if the Bengals moved back from 11 as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think you take whoever's left of your wish list when you're in the mid-20s. There's going to be one of them there.
So I want to talk – we'll talk about that. Let's talk about that. You know, because there's what the Bengals think, and there's what us outsiders of the organization
sure.
think, see, watch film, all that kind of stuff. So what the Bengals think, they think that between re-signing Uzama,
right,
and Eifert, so I said five contracts earlier. I guess I meant six contracts really to players between re-signing and the two outside guys so far. Between re-signing Uzama and Eifert, they think – The assumption the impression they're giving us is that okay, we handled tight end at least for now, right? Everybody in the world has been mocking them, Devin Bush and Devin White at number 11. They re-signed Preston Brown to a big, you know, pretty big contract for a guy that's a very limited football player. He's good at certain aspects, but he's a limited football player.
He's their two-down backer.
Middle linebacker. So then you go, okay, well, I don't know what that means in terms of them potentially looking at these middle linebackers. And then they sign a right guard and a right tackle to money that, you know, we can say what we want about Hart, but to money that shows that he's starting. Yeah, those guys are starting. John Miller and Hart are going to start. So where I'm getting to here is, you know, that potentially – I don't want to say eliminates, but it lessens the likelihood of a Cody Ford at 11, of a Jonah Williams at 11.
I think it's a zero chance.
So
I can't see him taking an offensive lineman at that pick. I mean, I'm with you. So I don't mind the John Miller deal because he's young and he's actually had some years of good tape.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Hart is young and there's really not been ever a year that he's had good tape. I mean, it's true though, right?
I know.
If you look at John Miller 2 years ago, he had some really good tape put together. Right. He was a third round pick. Bobby Hart wasn't a third round pick. There's a reason why he slid in his draft. You could replace him for a fifth or sixth round pick and probably get similar production for 1/10 of the cost. But like you said, they signed those places. So if you look at that pick 11, what if we narrowed that pick down? I mean, it's really quarterback, linebacker. That might be it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, they're not taking a tight end there anymore. What do the Bengals do when there's a deep class? They wait for whatever's there, and in round three, they're taking a tight end, or round four. They're taking whoever falls of that vaunted tight end group, right? That's what they've always done. And You know, I guess the corner. Let's not rule cornerback out. We know this team and their love for first round corners, and I think they might be staring at all the top corners and their pick of the litter at 11. And I could see them taking a corner in the first round, because guess what they're going to get? I think the other thing you have to consider with their first round picks is they want to take guys that they get that extra 5-year option. In a position that on the open market is going to make a ton of money.
Yep. That's a great point. And
I think cornerback is now open, because I wouldn't pay Darquez $10 million either to play the slot. And the Bengals see him as a slot corner. It's pretty obvious of how they played him. He may want to make outside corner money, but he's not going to make that here. So with him gone, you're looking at Dre, who they, you know, may want to move on from after this year. I think cornerback is I wish we were be able to bug that room and the Bengals would tell us what their plan is, because then it would make more sense, right? If these signings mean we're Zach Taylor came and pitched us, look, I'm going to play with Andy Dalton for a year. We're going to put enough wins together and work on my offense so that I can work out some of the kinks of being a new head coach. We're going to trade Andy Dalton, and then we're going to do a quick rebuild. And our plan is to be competitive in 2021. These deals make a whole lot more sense. You want to sign people when you're on the downtrodden. You want guys locked up so that you're not going out in free agency. What did the Browns have to do for the last 8 years? You got to pay the guy 2x what he's worth, because no one wants to go play there. So if you sign them now, knowing you're going into a rebuild, that I can stomach even Bobby Hart's contract if I knew the plan is we're going to rebuild. So we want guys locked up that are going to play there, that are going to be okay, but not be good enough to win us any games that we don't want to win, then I'm okay with that, right? But it just, we don't know if their plan is win. I mean, they sign guys, some says win now, some says win in 3 years, and it's kind of like are they treading water and killing themselves by halfway going in and not going all in one way or the other?
Yeah, there's a lot of mixed messages, and that's where I'm going next. But, I mean, you bring up a good point about cornerback potentially being in the mix. I think defensive line is probably in the mix at number 11 if somebody makes sense there. But I said this a couple of episodes too. I mean, with the showing that some of the wide receivers had, and you have A.J. Green in the last year of his deal. You have Tyler Boyd in the last year of his deal. Both of those guys are going to command some big money. We already got a text from a listener asking about that. We'll try and get to some listener questions later. So, I mean, maybe wide receivers in the discussion there. I don't know, but you know, my point was there is some major mixed messaging being thrown out, because they've signed guys that they technically fill starting roles either to an adequate level, maybe a below average level to adequate or slightly above average. They're all mostly basically 3-year deals, which, by the way, that's when the CBA runs out. So a lot of people are asking why
Mike doesn't want to be on the hook for any money, right?
Yeah. So, you know, depending on what happens there, the Bengals are that's why they're doing a lot of these 3-year deals. But there's a lot of mixed messaging there. And I think that's where we're going. That's where I was going with that. But you mentioned the treading water aspect. You and I have seen this team for years. You and I, especially myself, get frustrated with this team every year this time of year, because I see them keep their own. And a lot of the guys they do keep are talented. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they've done a good job of keeping a lot of talented guys that they've drafted, developed. And, you know, and it especially showed 2011 through 2015. So, I mean, at that point, you can't really complain. But my point is, there's not that extra level of the one or two signings where you go, wow, there's your improvement. Now, Miller appears to be an improvement, but I think we're saying marginal improvement at right guard at best.
He's the only player they've signed that even has a chance of improving, right? He's the only player. Everybody else is what they had before, or you know, a guy that he's the only outside guy that really has a chance to possibly be an upgrade.
So that's where I want to go here is, you know, I mean, is this the right strategy with a new coach, you know, and you kind of say, well, now you've got your free reign in the draft. Maybe you opened it up a little bit, like we just talked about at number 11 or at pick in the second round. Or I mean, are they doing him a disservice by not saying, hey, man, we'll get you a splash signing or two? Granted, there are still some big names out there that could be signed on rental deals. That could happen. We've seen the Bengals do that. But I don't know. I feel like it was kind of a deflation to usher in the Zach Taylor era when it came to free agency.
What was the most talented quarterback the Bengals have ever had on their roster?
Who?
Yes.
Well, who? I mean, you could say Ken Anderson or Boomer Esiason, but
most recently,
Carson Palmer.
Yeah. Right. And how did they get Carson Palmer?
They drafted him number one overall. Yeah.
They had the first pick because you look at the recent quarterbacks, they all got traded up to get, and this team has a propension of wanting to hold on to their picks. And I would argue that this team has to hold on to their picks. Now, I would argue some of the late picks they don't have to hold on to, but their high capital picks they have to hold on to because they don't sign free agents. You can't give up premium picks because you basically give yourself zero chances for error. So if you need three starters out of every draft, you need your first round, second round, and third round pick. You need to get two from there and then hope you find one in the rest of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start giving up those picks to move up, that really handicaps, like you said, is that fair for Zach Taylor? He probably doesn't want to give up any of his picks. I think if Dwayne Haskins or Kyler Murray is there at 11, I think he's going to want to take a quarterback. And he can get an Andy Dalton's quarter all he wants. He's going to want his guy. He's going to want a guy with some upside and a guy to hitch his wagon to. And the only way that the Bengals are ever going to guarantee their chance at the top quarterback is to be sitting at number one. You think they're going to pay to get from 2 to 1 even? You know, like the year Trevor Lawrence comes out, nobody's trading that. Everyone's like, oh, you can trade up and get him. How are you going to trade up and get him? The team that's there is going to take him.
Yeah, you either that or you got to do a Ricky Williams deal, right? I mean, the Ditka offer.
But even that, so go through the NFL and think what teams would not draft Trevor Lawrence. There's like three.
Yeah,
because even the even the Colts, it's like, why wouldn't we just take him?
Yeah,
he's worth as much to us just to be owned, and then we'll trade him for a boatload of picks, or we'll trade Andrew Luck. He turns out to be great. Yeah,
yeah.
So I mean, that's the thing is, you know, it's hard, like you said, when they're treading water. It's like, what are we doing here? Are we trying to make the playoffs, or are we trying to win a Lombardi Trophy?
Yeah.
Tell me, because if it's about making the playoffs and winning a playoff game, you know, I'm not here for that. I'm here. I want to see them hoist the Lombardi before they put dirt over my casket. So whatever that is.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing, right? It's like, I don't want to see a playoff win. Like, cool. You have to win a playoff game to win the Super Bowl. I get that. But as much as a playoff win will be exciting, after it's over, I'm going to want them to win another game. And
right.
If they don't, it's like you said,
we've been down that road.
How many free agents have they signed that make this team better from what a 6-win team was last year?
Right. And 3 straight losing seasons. Some interesting comments in the live YouTube chat. Chris Francis says this draft is stacked at the defensive front 7. That's what they should load up on. Peter Nefis says at 11, the Bengals pick for value, unless it really, really doesn't make sense. I think offensive tackle is still in the mix. Timber Maniac says Bengals made the playoffs 6 straight seasons, and they still they're still considered a poor destination for free agents. 5 straight seasons, but that's okay. Greg Els has got to go linebacker. Emilio Ravello says hope we get White. This was an interesting one from Michael Myers. I think a lot of our players, meaning these guys, I think he's referencing the guys that that the Bengals re-signed. I think a lot of our players are better than we think. Marvin never played guys either because they were too young or not to their respective strengths. I think that's an interesting comment.
I think there is some to that. You know, was Marvin maximizing any of the players? So even if Zach's a slight upgrade, maybe you get, but your entire roster gets a little bit better. But again, even if that is the case, why can't you give him a couple other good upgrades so that when the entire roster gets upgraded, then you upgrade two or three holes he has. Now you have a legit contending team instead of, oh, well, he elevated the roster. Now we're a 9-7 team instead of a 6-10 team. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, well, yes, maybe he marginally makes them all better, but does that give you a chance to really make some noise in the playoffs? Yeah. So, I mean, I agree. I think they could still – that's the thing. We don't know their plan. If their plan is 3 years from now, they might still take an offensive tackle. They might take best player available. I think you're right. With a defensive line, if Ed Oliver's there, I'm going to the podium to get him. Do I think he's going to be the next great thing? No, but he's one of the last blue chippers that could be there if Devin White's not there, that has the chance to be a home – like a whole different home run kind of – X-factor player. Put him next to Geno, and good luck double-teaming both of them. If you watch some of Ed Oliver's college tape, there's one play I was watching the other day, four guys blocking him. Two guys on him. He's lined up in the gap between the guard and the center. Those guys are blocking him. The guard on the other side is watching him from there, and then the running back chips him. I'm like, how's he expected to produce? So, you know, I think the whole coat thing was kind of much ado about nothing. And I don't see any character concerns with a guy who wants to wear a coat when it's cold. And his obviously there was some rift between him and his coach that went beyond that, I think. So,
yeah. But he does appear to be an exciting player. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He's Cody Toomey, our guest host for this week, and I am Anthony Cazenza. It's good to have our good friend Cody here. You can get this show on iTunes. You can get it on Stitcher, on Google Play. You can get it on Spotify. You can also get it on the Megaphone platform, as well as on YouTube and at CincyJungle.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. Your body is your own. That's why Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Today, lawmakers who oppose abortion are challenging Planned Parenthood. Affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. Planned Parenthood believes that health care is a basic human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies. They also work tirelessly to oppose the onslaught of new policies aimed at interfering with personal decisions best left to patients and their doctors. They won't give up and they won't back down. You can join Planned Parenthood in the fight to help make sure that the next generation can decide their own futures. The organization needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
We'll kind of talk about this just for a little bit here, Cody. What do you think now in turn? It's almost as if with these signings that we talked about, the Brown, Hart, Eifert, Uzama, it's almost as if these desperate needs kind of turned into now the draft needs kind of turned into now. We kind of want that position. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Desperate needs kind of turned into like high level wants, I guess.
Yeah.
So, we all know I'm going to ask about positions that you think they should start that are now based on what they've done in free agency, you know, so kind of tier the positions of need in your eyes. But what's going to be interesting is there's the Andy Dalton line in the sand group, right? And there are some people who are saying absolutely quarterback's the number one position that they need, all that kind of stuff. And then there are the people who say, well, get the other positions first, build around them.
Talent, so,
Yeah. So I am interested. And oh, by the way, speaking of quarterback, have you noticed that the Bengals have not had any activity in terms of hosting free agent quarterbacks or anything of that nature? So as maybe it may be predictable, but it does seem as if Zach Taylor is probably going to draft some sort of either developmental guy or a guy to bring to be the heir apparent to Andy Dalton at some point in this year's draft. But that being said, Cody, your kind of some of your the Bengals' biggest positions now that are still up there in terms of need or high level want as they go into the next month.
So I'll say one quick thing too on the quarterback. I agree with you. I think it's either pick 11 or one of those later picks, day three, for quarterback. I have heard some rumors. There's a third quarterback the Bengals could have their eye on in that area. I think everybody knows Drew Lock's kind of the next tier. I know someone that is sitting in a pick in the top 10, and when they ask their contacts who might jump them to try to get a quarterback, the guy said the Bengals, and he was specifically talking about Drew Lock. So he's the guy that would concern me a lot. It would look like to me just a kind of a panic. Everyone wants a new quarterback, so let's just take one because we got a new coach and we're going to have to do that. But I mean, that's going to be the shocker on draft day. If pick 11 rolls around and they pick Drew Lock, I think the pitchforks are coming out. Now, some will be happy, right? Like, anything but Andy. You could draft a seventh-round projected quarterback talent at pick 11, and 30% of this Bengals fan base would be excited because they would say, no more Andy Dalton, right? Now, I'm not to that point, but I think, you know, some people just want a full clean change, right? But I think when you look at the positions, like we said, we've checked off some of the things you might consider as like have to haves, because before they re-signed Hart and before they signed Miller, you were thinking somebody who's a guard, the Andrew Whitworth plan, right? Take a guy who played college tackle that they think might be a guard. You can play him at guard for a year and then maybe swing him out, or you can keep him in there and you got a Pro Bowl guard, right? So the Bobby Harts, Cody Ford's.
Cody Ford fits that mold, yeah, for sure, yeah.
Cody Ford, even a guy like Jonah Williams. And then you've got the guys like Andre Dillard that really good in pass protection, needed some work in their run protection, came from more of a spread type of offense. So he might have some more development that he needs. Maybe that's a guy they target at there. But I think you look at it, it's firmly planted into like linebacker, quarterback, or cornerback, I think is pick 11 written all over it unless they move out. Now, it would be shocking for them to take a tight end, even though there's some tight ends in this class that might go that high. Again, I think ideal case scenario for them in my mind is to try to move back. I think they should hope that one of these top guys slides to them. So if Devin White's not there, you try to get to 15, stay ahead of Pittsburgh, and then just get an extra pick and take Devin Bush there, and you solve your linebacker problem. Or you go all the way down, see if the Raiders want to come up. They've got a couple of first-round picks. They might give you next year's first-round pick, and that actually might be a top 10 pick. So see if somebody in the mid to late 20s wants to come all the way up and give you a first-rounder next year too, and then some, right? So if you're not going to give Zach Taylor free agents, give him draft picks.
Yeah, and obviously, as you alluded to earlier, the Bengals love their draft capital. They love to hoard it.
A pick swap too. I mean, like Darren Lee is a linebacker that I think is someone the Bengals should try to be target. You know, the Jets pick ahead of them. I wouldn't swap my first for their second for him. But, you know, if you did a pick swap trade for, you know, whatever, a linebacker that somebody was trying to get rid of, and you moved to the teens to pick up a veteran that you know can produce, you know, that's something that I think the Cordy Glenn kind of move. It's move down a few spots, get a player that you know is proven, and then you end up with two kind of first round picks, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, speaking of the linebacker spot, I think that one of the Devons is probably going to end up in Pittsburgh. I mean, I think if there are two teams that absolutely need linebackers the most in this draft, it's probably the Bengals and the Steelers. I mean, these teams are in a bad way at that position, and you know, they run a little bit of a different defensive scheme, so their profile might be different. But since the Steelers lost Ryan Shazier, I think they are needing definitely some linebacker help, as are the Bengals, obviously.
And they saw what kind of impact he had, you know, with him not being there. They saw a huge impact in tight ends versus them and over the middle stuff.
Yeah. And obviously the Bengals signed Preston Brown. But as we do know, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes anyway, but the Bengals did let go of basically a guy who could have been a starter for them in Vontaze Burfict. So now you have a one or two down player as your middle linebacker that's re-signed. You have an opening at the weak side spot. You've got, you know, Nick Vigil, Jordan Evans. You got this kind of mix of guys. I mean, to me, if I'm looking at the Bengals' draft needs, I still think overall, in terms of level of talent that is at a position and the open spots and the lack of depth, I still think linebacker is up there in terms of need. Yep. I think it's probably at the top. I think, you know,
often I think they have to end up with two linebackers by the fifth round.
I agree.
Yeah, and you almost have to go back into it later.
Yeah.
A guy, Brian Cashman's a guy that I think is pretty athletic, doesn't look athletic on tape, pretty sure tackler, shorter arms, doesn't have all the measurables, out of Minnesota, nobody knew who he was. He lit up the combine, everyone went back and watched his tape, and it's like, dude doesn't look athletic on tape, but he tests athletic. So, you know, he's one of those guys that's probably going to end up in day two now, maybe if you get lucky, early day three. But, I mean, if you end up with a guy like him or Gary Johnson's a guy from Texas. I have a feeling that they won't go there because of the Malik Jefferson thing and how that hasn't looked like it's worked out. I think, you know, his college teammate might get a little bit punished unfairly by the Bengals, you know, because, you know, you just went there and picked a guy and it hasn't worked out. Did you want to go back to that? Well, but I think that you got to end up with two linebackers by your fifth round pick. I really do. Whether that's you take one in the third and fourth round or whatever it is, I think you got to end up with two. And I'd be okay with them taking Devin Bush. Like, honestly, I would try to trade down. But if you can't get anything else and he's the best player you have besides, you know, if Ed Oliver's gone, Devin White's gone, the top tackles are gone, and he's the best thing you got left there at 11 – I mean, I just go ahead and take him. He's got smooth hips. He can cover. He can play weak side backer for you. His pro day, at the pro day, he looked really smooth, and they had him do some of the defensive back drills and like the hip turn drill and hip turn and go. I mean, he has got some smooth hips, and you know, it's weird to say that about another man, but you know, he looks like a defensive back the way he moves. So. He could be your weak side cover linebacker, and I think he starts right away and gives that to you. So, I mean, I think that's where you look, and I think I would have had them double dip at tight end. I don't know that they will now because the second guy is probably going to be one of those sixth round picks that you can sneak onto the practice squad. But, you know, you never know with Eifert. And I hate to say that he's the crazy part about him is it's not like it's hamstrings and stuff that, you know, that really are nagging. It's the crazy. I mean, it all started with the weirdest tackle and him putting his hand down in a Ravens game. And I've never seen someone put their hand down and their elbow do what it did.
Buckle. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just bad luck, I think. So I hope he stays healthy. He's one of my favorite players. I remember running around my living room excited when they drafted him. So,
yeah, I mean, you gotta hope for the best there for him in that unlucky streak ends. But I think linebacker tops the list still as a need. I do think quarterback is up there because whether or not you're an Andy Dalton guy or you aren't, the Bengals are in need of a backup quarterback. Yeah. And whether that's a backup quarterback they think is a simply a safe guy that can come in and win games if Andy Dalton is out for a short period of time, or a guy that they think can develop into the next franchise quarterback, somewhere in between, I don't know. But that is a need, and I don't know if it's a need at 11, but it is a need, and there are guys beyond the Kyler Murrays, Drew Locks, Dwayne Haskins that they could look at. And then I think defensive line is also in there as a need, as well as, like I mentioned, wide receiver. I think that is more of a long-term need.
Yep.
Because you have contract.
I think it's a bigger need than people want to admit.
Yep. A contract uncertainty with Green and Boyd. There was a rumor about John Ross being floated around with a trade that has since dissipated. And then behind him, you've got Josh Malone, Cody Core, and Alex Erickson. Erickson's pretty much a special teams guy. So I just think that's...
Malone has shown nothing. Cody Core hasn't caught a pass, and I don't even remember. he's mostly a special teamer too, right? He's their special teams ace. But when you look at receiver, it's like, okay, so John Ross, are they going to give him his fifth-year option? So you might have – you've got Boyd and Green's contracts come up after this year, and then Ross the year after, if they don't pick up his contract. I mean, his contract, he's a top 10 pick. His fifth-year option is going to be what, $11, $12, $13 million?
Yep.
He's going to have to show something the next 2 years for that to be worth it. Now, some would argue they almost always pick those up and just pay it, even if it's overpaid. But if he's giving you very little, you need something there, because AJ is 30, going to be 31. And, you know, how many more years of peak AJ? We've started to see him get more injuries than used to. And I think cornerback and wide receiver are a bigger need than people are willing to admit. I mean, we love to look at our favorite team's roster and go, oh, it's just a little here, a little there, you know, put a Band-Aid here and a Band-Aid there, and we're good. But we're closer to being a 3-13 team than a 13-3 team. It's just the truth. You've got one really good corner, another guy who's a liability a bit, and Dre with penalties. And even though he's been better in coverage, he's got the penalty issues. I mean, I think they're okay at safety. I really think safety is probably their position that they have the least need at. John Williams is a solid player. Jesse Bates is a good young player. You're really only going to play two unless you're going to go to a three safety look. They could use another edge rusher. Especially with Anarumo saying, you know, five down, which got me very excited. Some of the defensive fronts he's talking about, it's like, cool, run some odd fronts, run some things, that two fives and five twos that cause the other team, you force their hand, right? They want to run a gap zone gap scheme. Cool. We're going to run a 5-2 and we're going to put five down linemen, and you don't know which one's coming and which one's not. And so with that, you want more pure edge rushers, right? And there's been some hints to some 3-4 switching in the base, which is not going to be a lot of snaps, but still might be something where they want some extra linebackers. Or, you know, maybe that's the way Anarumo looked at Malik. Maybe that's why he couldn't find a defensive coordinator, because he wants somebody that takes Malik Jefferson and says, look, dude's super athletic, seems like he's struggling to pick up the playbook. Do what they did in Texas. Stick him in the A-gap and tell him to go get the quarterback. Stick him here and use his athleticism to his advantage, instead of what the Bengals have done forever with Marvin, is kind of like, well, here's our scheme. Learn how to play in our scheme. Here's your traits that are good. I mean, look at Marquise Flowers. He leaves here and everyone's like, this guy can't even play. He goes to New England and gets like 8 sacks in 4 games or whatever. It was something crazy, right? Because Belichick's like, dude, super athletic, go off the edge, rush the quarterback. And just do that with Malik Jefferson then, and start to get some value back out of him while he's learning how to play the position you want him to play.
And
that's my only thing, is just having a plan. And it changes everything, because we don't know what that plan is. But they've got needs everywhere except for running back. You could argue they still probably need a third string running back. I would have cut Mark Walton, but maybe that makes me a jerk.
Yeah.
Showed very little, and I don't want I won't even get into that. So.
it's interesting you mentioned about the plan. You mentioned, you know, about the, you know, throw a couple Band-Aids on the roster. This is something I just, you know, just to kind of close this segment here, this is something I've kind of been thinking about a lot, is that, you know, the optimistic Bengal fan says, hey, you know, like you mentioned, Cody, let's just get a couple of pieces here, re-sign some of these talented guys. We weren't healthy last year at some very critical spots. That's true. And if they stay healthy this year, draft well under a new regime, there's some more innovative minds on the coaching staff, that'll fix things. There's truth to that. But there's also the hard reality that Andy Dalton has been on IR two of the last four seasons. He's ended the season on IR two of the last four seasons. AJ Green, two of the last three seasons. Tyler Eifert, each of the last two seasons. Those are some of your best players on offense. And, you know, you're saying, hey, if they're healthy, if they're healthy. Which they should be. I mean,
Tyler Boyd's missed time. Joe Mixon's missed time. It's exactly. The NFL. Dudes are going to get – I mean, if they stay healthy, no teams stay healthy. The reason why 2015 was so crazy is that they made it through 10 weeks pretty much with, like,
minimal.
Unscathed.
Minimal.
Like, yeah. Nobody in the starting lineup that was of significance and their backup was a huge drop-off got hurt for any significant amount of time. That just doesn't happen. And what happened? All of a sudden in 2 weeks, it's like, poof, you know, Dalton goes down, everyone goes down, and then it unraveled fast.
Yep. And if it does work that these guys stay healthy, yeah, they're going to win games because those are talented players. But it is a very, very big risk to sit there and rest your laurels on and on these guys potentially being healthy when that really hasn't been so much the case. And then you're not doing much in free agency in terms of outside help to better your roster at this point. So that's kind of where a little bit of frustration comes in on my end, I'm sure, as well as Cody. Speaking of the linebackers being in need, the group being beleaguered, both in terms of last year's performance and injuries and all of that, and the state of it this year, the Cincinnati Bengals have released Vontaze Burfict. The move saves over $5 million of cap space. It was, for some, a move that was expected. For some, it was a move that was a little shocking. You know, maybe they thought that he would get a shot with the new coach. But the move saves money. We'll talk about some options as to where that money will go in just a second. But your thoughts, just kind of reminisce about the guy, I guess, Cody. Your thoughts on him being gone, his roller coaster of a tenure with the Cincinnati Bengals. And for those who don't know, We took the air on Tuesday night this week, a special day and time. Right before we hit the air, Vontaze Burfict signed a 1-year deal with the Raiders. So he's reuniting with Paul Gunther, as you know, that's pretty predictable. But that being said, he's no longer a Bengal. Your thoughts on number 55 and the peaks and valleys with this guy, man.
Right. I mean, I'm a Vontaze Burfict jersey owner. You know, he was one of my favorite players. You know, comes in as an undrafted free agent. Marvin Lewis legitimately tells him at his pro day, we're not going to draft you, but if you don't get drafted, we want you to come here. And, you know, he ends up here. And he was the first Bengal, I think, that didn't play scared of the Steelers for me. Right. In my, like, you know, there were other players that on offense, you know, Whitworth wasn't scared of him, but I'm talking about defensive players that just said, you know what? And this was before the game. I mean, the game has changed so much since he even started just, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. Right. I don't even know. What's he been? 7 years?
2012, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, look how much the game has evolved in 2012 when he came in as an undrafted free agent. I just remember seeing him fly all over and I'm like, this is the guy in Arizona State that wasn't fat. And now that he's in shape, like he's doing what he can do. And he was so good in anticipating. He wasn't super athletic, but his anticipation was so good. He was just like, boom, there's the ball. He's right on it. And seeing him the first couple times we played the Steelers when he just was, you know, giving him licks, that dude, why do the Steelers hate Vontaze Burfict? Why do Steelers fans call him the dirtiest player in the world? Well, first of all, they don't look at their own players in the same light. But second of all, it's because he did to them what they have done to us for the last 20 years. Right. And they didn't like it. And he wasn't scared of giving them what they were getting. And they knew there was when Burfict was on his game, the Steelers knew he could change the game in any second. And they didn't. They cheap shot at us just as much as before, but they knew they were going to get their payback if they did it, and Tez was going to be the one that did it. So, I mean, I'll never forget seeing him run through that tunnel and thinking, you know, we've slayed the dragon of playoff win, and we did it against the Steelers. Greatest day of all time. And then 30 seconds later, worst day of all time.
Yeah, I mean, that really, that sequence of events was really a microcosm of Burfict's career. I mean, right? He basically saved the game with a clutch interception. He hurt
Roethlisberger to get him back into it. On a clean hit, they can call that dirty all they want, clean as can be, lands on him. And then Ben comes back. He can't throw at all. And, you know, Tez gets him. So up, down, up, down, all within a sequence of 4 or 5 minutes of the game, like you said, such a microcosm. And then everyone goes, well, if Hill hadn't fumbled, Burfict would have never hit AB, and this would have never happened, and he would be a different Bengal. And I'm like, well, Hill did fumble, and we don't get the chance to rewind time. And he still, man, he hated that team so much. He couldn't stop. That was his problem, is he didn't know where to draw the line when it got dirty. And you know that the Geo hit was made him angry in that game, and he was out. I mean, he was trying to hurt Antonio Brown. Let's call it what it is. It's pretty obvious. Did he want to do to him what he did? No. I don't believe that he wanted to hurt him as bad as he did, but I think he wanted to get Antonio Brown off the field so they couldn't come back and win the game. That's just how he's wired. I don't know him personally, obviously, but to me, it just seems like that's how he's wired. Take their best player out. I'm a linebacker. That's what we do.
Well, I mean, there's a track record of that, and it may be a little easier to admit that now that he's not a Bengal anymore. But we saw him twist the ankle of Cam Newton in the pile. We saw him take unnecessary hits to Max Williams, the Baltimore tight end, and in the preseason that got him suspended to the Chiefs running back. Yeah. You know, it really, I guess, was after 2015 where it just started to get to a point where you're going, what are you doing, dude? I mean, you accept when he made the Pro Bowl and he was largely available and making plays. I mean, you saw him in that first game against the Steelers. That was like 13-7. The Bengals won. I think that was the game Bell went out with an injury. Yeah. You saw
clean tackle, by the way.
It was
clean tackle.
He had been out of the lineup until that game, and you saw just the difference that him being there had made. Obviously, he was a big difference maker in both the positive and the negative in the playoff game, but largely throughout that game, the positive.
If Hill doesn't fumble, he probably is the MVP of that game. And they're writing about how a middle linebacker took over a football game.
Right.
AJ McCarron could not move the ball for three quarters.
Right. And I don't know. I just saw – and it really, this was what happened with the rest of the Bengals. After that loss, nobody, especially veterans who had been on that team for a while, nobody was the same. Nobody played the same. Nobody – I mean, even – I hate to say this, but I mean, even in 2016, you look at the offensive line play with Andrew Whitworth. That was not one of Andrew Whitworth's best years. He didn't play the same. Adam Jones didn't play the same. Vontaze Burfict didn't play the same. Nobody played the same after that loss. And I don't think they ever fully recovered from that, Burfict especially. And then you saw him towards the later years of his Bengals career, really just where you go, oh, man, you kind of not only missing tackles and stuff,
the baggage when the talent outweighed it.
Yep.
When it started to get equal, you were just like, dude, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Yep.
And what are you doing out there? I mean, he's like getting in Kelsey's face before the play's even over when they're playing the Chiefs last year. Like, come on, dude, play the game.
Right. And unfortunately, that's where they were at, you know, with this situation. He is now an Oakland Raider, which is predictable in terms of the signing. And I guess if you want to say player profile, given Raider Nation's proclivity to
in the black hole.
But I guess where I want to go now, I mean, we can reminisce for a long time about Burfict, but where I want to take this is, where is this extra money best spent? Now, it's not a lot, but is it worth spending on a, and forgive me, I haven't looked quite yet at the most updated recent free agent availability as we sit here on Tuesday night, but I haven't heard a deal for Ndamukong Suh. I haven't heard a deal for, you know, some of these guys that the Bengals may be able to get for a rental deal.
What about the linebacker, Zach?
Zach Brown. You know, I don't think he's been picked up anywhere. So I guess, should this money be used? And we've gotten a couple comments about it in the YouTube chat as well. Should this money be used on an outside free agent acquisition, possibly in the rental deal mode for 1, maybe 2 years? Or is the team best served to use this money towards re-signing Tyler Boyd and or AJ Green and or William Jackson and, you know, these guys whose deals are coming due that they usually like to get done in the summer?
I just got a text from Jeff Hobson. He said it's going to be used for the rookie pool of money. He needs to save that for the rookie pool.
The in-season injury windfall, right?
That always cracks me up. Those 10 rookies make the team, they supplant veterans who are making more than them. So stop it. I'm using it to try to get Zach Brown, the linebacker from the Bills. I'm going to try to say, here's the money. It's already spent. So, hey, what's a one-year deal? Might as well replace a knucklehead with a guy who also has some history being a little bit of a knucklehead. And maybe there's some upside there. And they catch lightning in a bottle. And Zach Brown comes here and gets squared away with some better. Because I think in Buffalo, things were kind of bad for the team for a while. So, you know, he wasn't there his whole career, but I think maybe some of his knucklehead stuff came from, you know, you're on a losing team. You might – idle hands are the devil's playground, right? So when you're losing a lot of games, you know, you're less likely to care if you take a cheap shot on somebody, right, because you're not really worried about winning the game. So, I mean, that's where I would take it. I don't think Sue's going to take – I think Sue's going to look for – he did a mercenary deal last year on a one-year, so – I could see him trying to get another long-term deal. I don't know that he'll get one, but I think he might be looking for more than 1 year. Who knows? Maybe he wants to just do one at a time. Here's the one thing that I never understood is, why don't the Bengals, if these guys, and they don't want to give out guaranteed cash, right? Why don't they sign some of these big free agents? Cool. Sign them for a 1 year deal and overpay them by $5 million. You value comp picks so much, do what the Patriots do. Sign these guys or trade for them in the last year of their deals, make them look really good for a year, and then get a real comp pick, like a third rounder or a fourth rounder, instead of, you know, 3 6th rounders. Like, what are you going to do with 3 6th rounders? Is where sign one of these guys that wants, you know, hey, a prove it deal, get them in. And then if they walk, who cares? If they walk, you get a third round pick and you got a year of production out of them. That's one thing that I kind of wish they would do. If they don't want to pay guaranteed money, I mean, the guys, if he signs a 1 year deal, it's all pretty much guaranteed. You're not going to cut him before camp. So overpay him by a couple $1 million and bring him in on a 1 year deal. And if he leaves, he leaves.
Yeah. Darrell Revis was the king of that a couple of years ago.
The Patriots got a third round pick for him too, right? After they brought him in. So, I mean, that's the thing is, heck, you could sign a guy like that. And if the season goes bad, you might be able to trade him in season and get a pick for the next year. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to try to use that money to get a linebacker like Zach Brown. If not, I think I'm going to Tyler Boyd right now before he has another season and saying, "Hey, let's make this a long-term commitment." And if you need that for his bonus, guaranteed money, then take it. I mean, if I'm Tyler Boyd, when the Bengals come walking, I just laugh. If that's me, I'm going to get seeing some of the deals these guys are getting in free agency. I'm betting on myself if I'm him. His trajectory is headed in the right direction.
Well, shameless plug. We interviewed Tyler Boyd a couple times in January, and he did say he wants to stay with the Bengals. That could be very well player speak. AJ Green has mentioned that he also wants to stay with the team long term, but obviously money talks, and we know what else walks. So, we'll see what happens. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it has to go to an extension to. I would agree with you. A rental deal to a position of need like linebacker, especially for a guy a little bit younger, Zach Brown. I think he's only been in the league a handful of years. He's got a little bit of personality clash issue, I guess. I think he was with the Redskins last year where there were some issues, but
yeah.
If you have him for a year and he can come in and be an athletic guy and produce for you. You know, why not? And I think that's money that's decently well spent. And then, or you put it to Boyd.
Then you're not pigeonholed at 11 if one of the linebackers is staring at you that you have to take him.
Yep.
It's one of those things. The only thing I don't like about the John Miller signing, if we want to go back to that a little bit, is it gives them no flexibility with Billy Price. I kind of wanted them to have some flexibility in this draft. There's a couple good center prospects. And I was hoping that, maybe if one of those guys slides and they're staring at him in round three, you can bring in a guy like that, and then it gives you the ability to move Price to right guard. Now, we all know what they should do, what the Bengals will do. They're never going to admit they're wrong 1 year into it, right? They just don't. Same thing I think we talked about. When they sign these free agents, should that stop them from drafting a right tackle? Should it? Absolutely not. Will it? Absolutely. They're not paying Bobby Hart – $7 million to get beat out by a rookie in camp. And I guess maybe we don't know, because part of that was Marvin. Marvin avoided confrontation or conflict with players in the media going, hey, this guy looks great in practice. Why isn't he playing more, like the plague, right? So he wouldn't want a right tackle to come in, because if you draft Jonah Williams at 11 – let me just tell you a little secret. In camp, he's going to look better than Bobby Hart at right tackle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably true.
And then you're going to play a guy on the bench, $7 million to sit around? They're not doing that.
Right. That's just not the only time I can really remember that happening, and this is going in the way back machine, is I believe it was 2002 when the Bengals signed Richmond Webb, left tackle. And, they paid him a decent amount of money, and then they drafted Levi Jones that year, and the season was getting out of control, and then they played Levi Jones. So, and Levi Jones ended up being a pretty good left tackle for the team.
And the draft people laughed.
Oh, they got raked over the coals. Yeah, they got raked over the coals.
Levi Jones. I remember Kuiper just, about fell out of his chair laughing.
Right, so. Yep. Well,
shows you how much the draft is a crapshoot, though, too, right?
That's right. That's absolutely right. Well, we kind of went on a different tangent there, but Vontaze Burfict is no longer with the Bengals. They have an opening at their starting weak side linebacker spot as we sit here right now. And the Bengals are $5 million or so richer in terms of cap space and whatnot. Burfict is now a Raider on a one-year deal. And I did throw out, just to kind of end the segment, I did throw out on our Twitter account a poll to our listeners, basically, was the release of Vontaze Burfict the right move for the Bengals? 86% of the voters said yes, 5% said no, and 9% says depends on basically the acquisitions that they use it on. So vast majority said it was time to move on. So,
and there's still the 2015 Burfict. If you look at the comments on Cincy Jungle's posts, when they post them on Facebook and all that stuff, there's always two or three guys, oh, this is a terrible move. He's the heart of the defense. I'm like, have you watched the game in the last 2 years? I mean, he's averaging two tackles a game. He's not the guy that we all remember. I mean, his lure got so big, and it was like he was this superhero. And then his fall was so fast. It was actually pretty crazy. And I worry about him, honestly, physically, mentally, et cetera. I mean, the amount of concussions that guy's had documented is high. And you know that he's had issues with leading with his head and how he tackles for longer than that. So there's probably more than that. And I legitimately care about his health. And that's my real concern with him is like, it was scary to see him last year when he was getting, when he got that concussion late in the season. It's just like, you know, what's the Varsity Blues guy? It's just like, man, how many more, right? Yeah, how many more of these can he take? Right. And it's like, you worry about him and his mental health and his he's got a, you know, kids and what have you, his life going after football.
Yeah. It became a deal where he was almost, you know, especially last year when he was on the field, he was missing more tackles than he was making in a game. And that's just it doesn't work.
He couldn't play in the new NFL because he tried to play how he thought he needed to play to not get fined. And that wasn't his style of football.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Well, this is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. We've talked about a number of topics tonight. We're going to try and get to a couple of listener questions. We're running a tiny bit long. You can try it. We already got a text. You can try and get at us at 949-542-6241. We'll try and maybe take a call or two. Like I said, we've got some texts, but this is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. You can get this show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, on Spotify, on the Megaphone platform. You can also get it at cincyjungle.com and on YouTube. Go subscribe to our channels, leave us a rating, and follow us on Twitter at BengalsOBI. And we appreciate all the feedback. We appreciate all the listeners and all of the interaction we receive both throughout the week as well as when we record live going forward. Cody, that one of the texts we got on the OBI line, it's kind of a two-pronged question. I don't want to talk too long about the first part of it because we did talk about this last week on last week's episode, but basically seeing what an AJ Green trade would net and if it's worth it this year. My standpoint was, you know, when he's healthy, he's one of the best in the league. And whether you're sticking to Andy Dalton or whether you are bridging to a new quarterback, you are doing either of them a major disservice by getting rid of AJ Green.
Sure.
At this point. So
if you get rid of Green, you might as well start a full rebuild.
Right. And that's, I kind of said, hang on to him. You know, if you extend Boyd, you can maybe franchise AJ for one more year. Yeah, it's expensive, but then you got to maybe for this year, for next, and then you can maybe talk about moving on from him or what have you. I just think, regardless of how the Bengals are treating the quarterback position this year, I think you need to keep AJ Green. Your thoughts? And I also don't think the Bengals are going to get what the Giants got for OBJ. So, no. From that standpoint, you kind of go, is it even worth it?
Right. I mean, I think you look at the Antonio Brown trade and the OBJ trade, and you probably are somewhere right in the middle of those two, right? It's not a knucklehead as much as Brown with the off-field baggage, whether it be the speeding things and the locker room, and just he basically said to the Steelers, I'm going where I want to go, and they're like, no, you're not. And then he made it so impossible for them to trade him anywhere else, they got less for him, right? To the point where they had a deal struck with the Buffalo Bills, and then he was like, fake news, and Buffalo's like, hell yeah, it's fake news now, because you know, we're not trading for somebody who said he's not going to show up to camp, which is what some of the reports were. So for me, you're probably somewhere in the middle. You'd probably be lucky to get a second round pick. And if that pick comes from the Patriots, it's really a third round pick. And because of AJ's age and his contract situation, you don't have the leverage as you do in the OBJ trade. If somebody doesn't give me a first round pick, I'm not talking about trading AJ Green unless he just tells me quiet. And AJ Green would never do what Carson Palmer did, where he said, I'm retiring or you're trading me.
Right.
But I could see AJ Green going in there quietly to Katie and Troy and saying, hey, look, looks like things aren't going to turn around here soon. Maybe it's time for me to find a new home and let them find a suitor for him quietly so they can get as much back. Because I think he does care about the organization. and would try to like at least get let them get what they could for him. I'm all on board at keeping him, even with a rookie quarterback. I want him there for that as long as I can keep him and keep Tyler Boyd. Because I think you want to keep them both, and then you've got a decision to make on John Ross in 2 years. But that at least gets you through. They're taking a quarterback high either this year or next year. Let's just face it. The Andy Dalton situation has to be solved. I cannot see this organization lining up and signing Andy Dalton for $25 million. I just can't see it.
Yep.
Maybe they shock me, and maybe he takes no guaranteed money hardly. But are we really going to sign up to Dalton for $25 million a year for 4 or 5 more years? I cannot see this team shelling out a $120 million contract. I just can't do it. I just don't think they have the cash to do it. $40 million guaranteed. They're struggling to write $5 or $6 million guaranteed things. They're going to cut him a check for which, by the way, if the owners really care about an even playing field and the small market owners, the next CBA, the thing they should fight for is that whole escrow thing. It's such an antiquated rule, right? It was made for when they were worried the teams were going to default on payment. Let me just tell you something. Some owners are richer than others, but they're all filthy rich, and they're not bouncing checks. The AAF might be bouncing checks or worried about bouncing checks, but the NFL is printing money. They might as well put a mint in Roger Goodell's office and let him just print U.S. currency. So, I mean – I think that rule is antiquated, and I think that would help teams like the Bengals, like the Packers, like some of the other the Raiders, that it's not about the cap. It's about having to put cash in a bank account that they don't have. I think I'm keeping AJ unless somebody comes up and says, hey, we'll give you an OBJ type of deal, a good player, a high pick, and another pick. And I don't think you can get that for him.
Yep. And the other question from the listener here was basically about AJ McCarron. I kind of don't want to address that really, because it's kind of like, well, we're talking about it's easy fodder to talk about, I guess, because he was a Bengal and the Bengals have a new backup quarterback and you kept Dalton and all. But I mean, there are some other stuff with, you know, Brian Callahan was the quarterback coach in Oakland when McCarron was there last year. You know, there are some connections there, but overall, I don't see the need unless this is a full blown commitment to Andy Dalton.
Yep.
I don't see the need.
Or a full blown rebuild, and you're going to bring AJ McCarron in to win 4 games for you this year.
Yeah. I mean, that's which is a non-commitment to Andy Dalton.
Right, exactly. Well, I thought you said full-blown commitment. Sorry, yeah. So, that's the thing is either – why would you – if Andy Dalton gets hurt, you aren't going to make the playoffs anyways, whether it's him or Jeff Driskel, and you're going to pay him way more than you're going to pay Jeff Driskel. So, what's the point? Unless you're trading Andy Dalton for a third-round pick or whatever you can get for him, and you're going to say, well – you know, all those people who wanted to see AJ McCarron, let's see you. Here's the ticket office number. Yeah. We're going to start AJ McCarron and see what he can do for a year,
yep.
Which I think would lead you to a 3 or 4 win season and a top 5 pick to go get your future quarterback. And that would be the plan that you would see unfold, I think.
Well, it doesn't even matter because I've been told by a couple people now in the live YouTube chat that I guess it just was breaking while we were on the air here.
Texans.
McCarron's going to the Texans, yeah.
I already had a visit there yesterday. So
yeah, so that's not even an issue you have to worry about. I had a couple of other questions from folks in the live YouTube chat that revolved around – just kind of some updates. Greg L. asked, any news on Vinnie Curry? No, he visited the team on Monday. My guess is that's probably not happening, because usually if a guy visits, they talk about a deal shortly after that. If the visit concluded, usually a day late by a day later, there's no announcement. Excuse me. There, my guess is nothing's happening there. They're probably kicking the tires on him.
He could be a guy that they have on their list in case someone goes down at camp, or maybe Carl Lawson's not ready for camp, and you bring him in on a vet minimum deal.
Yep. Or after the draft, you know, maybe they're targeting edge rushers at certain points in the draft. And if they don't get one they like, you know, that could be a guy they look at after the draft. And that was, I'm glad you brought up Lawson. That was the other point. That was the other question I saw. I'm trying to see who that was in the live YouTube chat, but there's Michael Myers asked, is there any updates on Lawson? And no, there's not. We have one call, Cody. We'll take it, and we'll get off the air here. So let me grab it. Hey, it's the Orange and Black Insider. Who's this?
This is Spencer.
Spencer, what's going on, man?
Not much. Again, thanks for having me on. Quick question, simple question. We're all talking about, or you guys are all talking about, who the Bengals could look for in free agency on the type of rental deals and everything. But realistically, what's the likelihood that they're even going to do that? I mean, they value the draft so much. I just don't see them doing anything really anymore.
I think you're definitely correct, and I'll let Cody chime in as well. But I think you're definitely correct in the fact that they value the draft picks so much that, you know, they are going to look outside free agents that are going to take precedence in terms of them bringing the Bengals bringing them in will be ones that have been cut because it would affect the compensatory pick formula. That's how it's been, especially in recent years. So they will look to do that. And they will also talk to some of these guys like a Vinnie Curry that they can get with low guaranteed money. Cody, your extra thoughts on what Spencer's asking there too.
Yeah. I mean, and they're going to look for guys that won't cost them comp picks, and, or wait until enough of their guys have signed so that they've got an extra, right? Cause as long as they lost more than they gained, they're still going to keep their top comp pick. So you may actually get a decent comp pick for what Tyler Croft left for. And then if Denard gets $8 or $9 million, you might see another decent one there as well. So as long as they don't bring in more than they lose, then they can maybe sign somebody. But look for guys that got cut. I kind of posted a cynical version of the Bengals free agency flowchart, but one of the first ones was this person cut from another team? Or would he cost us a comp pick, you know, because I mean, that's, if you really think about it, it's funny to joke about, but it is kind of true. I mean, they're going to look for guys that don't risk their comp picks and don't want a lot of upfront guaranteed money and likely don't want blockbuster deals. So at this point though, we're into week two. So the, every day that passes, the dollar signs start getting spent elsewhere and thus leverage as a player begins to go back from player to team. So when how free agency works is you got the pendulum, right? So first day of free agency, all the leverage is with the player. I got all these teams talking to me. They all have a ton of money. How much money are you going to pay me? And as time goes on, it swings back into the team's favor. We only have this much money left. Doesn't seem like that many people are knocking down your door. Here's what we have to offer. So we may see some more team-friendly deals kind of get struck here in the next couple of days.
Yep. So and the other thing that Spencer frustrates me is that if the Bengals had been using these compensatory picks to continuously draft effective players and guys who help them out long-term, then I would say, you know what, the plan works. Keep going with it. But it's a bunch of fifth round picks, sixth round picks, and seventh round picks, and you got your Reed Fragles, right? You have your Brandon Wilson's, a backup safety. There's no offense to Brandon Wilson; he just re-signed his restricted free agent tender with the club as a special teams guy. But those are the guys you are getting as comp picks. You are not getting, you know, there's probably one off examples of some decent guys got, but for the most part, these aren't guys who are reshaping the roster and immediate impact guys. These are depth guys. These are special teams guys, not guys that you get in free agency that can really turn your team around in one off season. Hey, Spencer, thanks for the call, man. Don't hesitate to call us again on another show, buddy.
All Yeah, of course. You guys are the best.
All right, see you, buddy. Bye. See ya. That was Spencer on the OBI line, and that's a good one to end on tonight, Cody. You know, I don't like to sit here and be negative, but it's just this time of year really brings it out of me with the Cincinnati Bengals, especially in a year when you thought so many things were changing with the coaching staff. There's just so many similar.
New day, Anthony. New day. Yeah. We're still not like the old day. Yeah, I mean, I think that was the biggest thing is, you know, we got sold some snake oil, right? You know, they preach how it's going to be so different, and they change the culture, and then it goes from Zach Taylor, and he kills his – I mean, I can't stress how excited I was after his press conference. Like, he killed his opening press conference. And you don't win in press conferences, but from him to what we had at Marvin and just ignoring the media, being disrespectful, almost to the point of disrespectful to them. And then he is just like open book and so excited. And then Brian Callahan talks about motion and gap runs and all these things that we want and matchup capabilities and jet motions and how these can give you matchup advantages. And you're like, okay, these are different. And then he hires Jim Turner, and you're like, all right.
Don't even get me started on that, because I've actually been easy on the guy. And if you go read the Cincy Jungle comment boards, my gosh, they think that all we want to do is continue to rake that guy over the coals.
Right, but my point is, so it starts starts to like, okay, so now it's going to be different. It's going to be different. And then it's like, oh, well, maybe they'll spend more in free agency, or maybe they'll at least make one splash for Zach. You know, that should have been our hashtag when they hired him. One splash for Zach in free agency. Just one, right? But then it's like he's got one hand tied behind his back, and people get mad when you say that, but it's coming to the point where it's like, was it really – I mean, did Marvin increase the potential of this roster? Not really, but it's starting to look like, you know, is it really this front office? It's still the problem. I guess we'll find out when the season starts. And I like to be excited about this team. It's just like you said, this time of year, it's hard. April 19th, we'll all be back in. I mean, you know, we'll be bellied up drinking the orange Kool-Aid because they'll have a good draft. Everyone will rate their draft well because they're good at getting good value picks. And training camp will be all in, and then hopefully we'll still be excited by week 8 or 9.
Yeah, I remember last year, you know, everybody thought they would be very, very bad. At this time of year, then all of a sudden the draft hit, and then you heard about some of these guys in the spring and the summer, and all of a sudden you started there wasn't the negative perception last year. And then, you know, they started 4-1, then the injuries hit and other
glaring. The 4-1 could have been 1-4 easily. Yep. Right. There were a lot of really close things, but at the same time, then on the back half there were 3 or 4 that broke against them. That's football, right? But yeah, I mean, I think there was some good buzz, and then I was scared when they were in game 5. I was like, man, I hope they win like a couple of these next two. And then turns out the injuries, the Eifert thing, just you can just tell how much it hurts the offense when he's out of it. So
it really does. It really does. Sorry, we got another call and we couldn't get to it. But, they're going to do some more things. They're going to probably extend a player or two in the summer, like they do with so many of their coveted stars that have 1 year left on their deal. They're going to make some moves on that front, but they may even make some more free agency moves in the summer after the draft once they let things settle there. It's going to happen, but it's probably not going to be a ton of household names or big splashy moves. It just doesn't happen this time of year. So, Cody, thanks for filling in tonight, man. You were awesome. It's good to hear.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, don't be a stranger. And for those of you who don't know, you can give him a lot of hell. John Sheeran, my usual co-host, he's on like a cruise. He's out in like Cozumel or Cabo San Lucas or something.
Don't add him. Don't add him, or he will fight you. Sid.
Yeah. Seriously, he's. He's abroad, but he should be back soon, and hopefully hopefully he's having a good time. So we miss him, but we are glad to have you on, Cody. And please, let's make this a more frequent thing, bud.
Sounds good. You let me know when, and I'll make it happen.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Again, this is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He's Cody Toomey. He can be found on Twitter at Kodikai, C-O-D-I-K-I. I'm Anthony Cazenza. You can get this show on Stitcher, on Google Play, on iTunes, on Spotify. You could also get it on the Megaphone platform as well as YouTube and gosh, the phone's blown up now, of course, as well as on YouTube and CincyJungle.com. So yeah, good show tonight, Cody. We'll see you next time. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Have a good rest of the week.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit DrinkSmartwater.com.